It's time for the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. In an era of chaos, confusion, and craziness, Ference is a voice for common sense. As a financial literacy educator, speaker, and entrepreneur, Ference cuts through the noise to help us understand how current events affect our money, economy, and our freedom. Now, here's Ference Toth.
Welcome to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me. First thing I want to say is thank you for all the folks who attended my Your Personal Bank workshop in Seattle this past weekend. It was great to see our new faces. And then, of course, a number of folks that have been clients of mine, some of them 7, 8, 9 years, in fact. And it was great to bring information up to date. It's the best time in over 42 years for Your Personal Bank due to the higher interest rates. Also true for annuities. I shared all that information. But one of the things that really got everybody's attention was all the economic data regarding are we headed to recession or not. And I'm going to cover some of those things I shared in the workshop in addition to some things that have come out new even since last week's workshop. First of all, 37% of small businesses have seen their earnings drop. Over the past 3 years, small business earnings have been declining in a nearly straight line down. We haven't seen this type of small business earnings decline since the Great Recession. And we are now at the lowest levels or worst levels for small business earnings since the Great Recession. Now, why is this so important? Small businesses hire nearly half of the employees of the United States. There's a small firm or small business optimism index. And currently, it's in its worst position it's been in literally 50 years. Again, the only time the small business optimism index was worse than levels it is right now was during the depths of the Great Recession over the past 50 years. These are not good signs, folks, but we're going to keep going. In fact, the large businesses, it turns out over 450 large businesses have now declared bankruptcy year to date in 2024, and we're still only in September. That is nearly the same number we saw in 2020 when we had the COVID lockdowns. The only time frame where we saw higher numbers of large business bankruptcies, again, was in the depths of the Great Recession. We're not too far off those numbers, and we still have another quarter to go. We'll see how it plays out. So both large and small businesses are struggling as we speak. The points that I made in the recent workshop that I think gained some of the most attention was the questions that I asked about, are we headed for recession? Now, one of the things I brought the receipts, and I'm going to share a few of those things too. One of the keys people need to understand is recessions are not necessarily a bad thing. Many people look at it as a negative, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, recessions are part of the healthy economic cycle that we see, just like the seasons of the year. There's four seasons a year. We can't have spring without winter. You can't have a rebirth without having winter. And that's really, from an economic cycle standpoint, recessions are likely the winter. It washes out the excesses in the system. And by the way, the average economic cycle, you can go back 100 years, is about every 5 to 7 years. So how long does each cycle last? Typically about a year or two. That'd be normal. There's harsher winters, we'll put it that way, than others. But a year or two is pretty typical time frame for any part of any economic cycle. Look, again, it's not that recession is bad. It's just you need to be aware. You know, if it's a freezing outside and you go out without a coat, you're probably going to suffer. And your assets will suffer also if you don't adjust accordingly. Protect the downside. Diversify. Have some guaranteed assets. That's why the balanced portfolio idea that's been around for decades talks about a 60-40 split, stocks and bonds. The 40% typically being the bond portion, and it's recommended because it's less risky, lower risk option. Well, one thing I share with people all the time is, well, if you're doing that to lower risk, why not go to no risk? And annuities and your personal bank, high cash value policies have zero risk. They're guaranteed insured assets. So I'd rather have no risk than low risk. part of the economic natural cycle is assets that thrive in growth periods, low interest rates, strong economic growth, you know, your spring and summer timeframes, typically suffer in recessions. And those are often assets like stocks and real estate. Those are the most common. Interest rate sensitive assets actually thrive in higher interest rate environment. Think of CDs. In 2022, you couldn't get 1% even on a long-term CD. In 2024, you can get 4% plus. That's a quadrupling of returns just in a couple of years, again, due to the higher interest rate environment, thanks to the Federal Reserve. A quadrupling of returns is massive in just a couple of years. Now, the last type of asset are guaranteed assets. As I stated earlier, they have steady, continual growth in all economic environments, good, bad, or indifferent. Dividend-paying high cash value insurance policies and index annuities are two key guaranteed assets. CDs are too, but they're a little more volatile in their returns because the Federal Reserve does change rates up and down over the years quite aggressively. In fact, one of the charts I showed was the prime rate, for example, and it went as high in the last 20 years. Do you know we've had prime rates as high as 9.5% and as low as 3%, and they can shift quite dramatically depending on what the Federal Reserve does, and typically they go down in a recession and they go up during more healthy or inflationary economic cycles. Now, those of you that don't know what the prime rate is, that's typically the lowest rate an individual can borrow money at with good credit. And again, your personal bank has access to subprime even, depending on the size of your account. It's one of the only ways an individual can borrow money at lower than prime. Very interesting option. But the question I asked in the workshop was, are we headed for a recession? And the facts are, if you look at the numbers, the reality is some parts of the economy are already in recession, and some portions of the country are already in recession as much as the past 2 years. Leading economic indicator is the bond inversion curve. And usually you look at the 10-year and the 2-year bonds. Now, 10-year bonds typically pay a higher interest rate than 2-year bonds because you're tying up your money for a longer period of time. Much like if you buy a shorter-term CD, most people understand you'll tend to get a lower interest rate. A longer-term CD will pay you a higher interest rate, again, because you're committing the money for a longer period of time. And that is typically true with bonds also. The longer time frames typically pay higher interest rate. Occasionally, that inverts. The short term, the 2-year, pays a higher interest rate than the 10-year. And the bond market is known as the smart money. That's where the large institutional investors, the bond market is multiple times larger than the stock market. Many people don't realize that. And so the big institutional investors, that's where they play. Well, we have had one of the strongest bond inversion, the 2-year paying more interest, higher interest than the 10-year, since 1980. And of course, what was happening back, late 70s and 1980 period? Well, we had tremendous inflation, the worst we've seen, in a generation. The other thing about the bond the inversion curve is when it happens, it typically predicts anywhere from about 6 to 18 months before the recession occurs. Well, our yield inversion curve happened a little over a year ago, something like 14, 15 months, and basically has stayed there until very recently, where it's actually reversed itself. Here's the other key point about the bond inversion curve most people don't realize. When it goes into inversion, in other words, the 2-year pays more than the 10-year, which is backwards, the most typical situations. When it first happens, that's usually a 6 to 18-month indicator that recession is likely going to occur. By the way, the inverted yield curve has predicted the past 7 recessions accurately and correctly. And every recession, I believe, for the last 50, 60 years, except for one. It's a super accurate leading economic indicator. But here's the other part about it most people don't realize. When the yield curve goes back, spread back to normal, where the 10-year, the longer-term one, pays higher than the 2-year, that is typically the trigger or very soon thereafter when the recession actually occurs. So it's not when it inverts. That's the warning shot. That's the warning that it's coming. When it comes out of the inversion, that's when recession is imminent, and it's happened just in the past week or so. This is big news, folks. So I've been stating for the last year or so that look out for on the horizon, we're headed towards recession. Again, using the analogy of the seasons, if a recession is winter, much like we have four seasons of the year, where are we at right now? Folks, the leaves are changing color. The nights are getting cooler. Winter is coming. It's just a matter of time, and it's happening very soon. So I would say sooner rather than later, batten down the hatches, put on your coat, reduce your market risk, increase your guaranteed assets. Your personal bank and annuities can fit that bill. The advantage of your personal bank, of course, is very high liquidity. If you want to have your funds available for taking advantage of opportunities down the road, because again, recessions create opportunities. The Japanese word for crisis is kiki. And what's interesting is the first character means dangerous, which a crisis certainly can be. But the second character means opportunity. So in many ways, the Japanese, I think, have it right. The Japanese word for crisis or definition really is dangerous opportunity. Economic recessions can be dangerous, especially if you're not prepared for them and you don't act accordingly. Keep your money at risk, for example, and allow it to go down, ride the roller coaster, if you will. When things do get better and opportunities present themselves, for example, assets are available now on the cheap, if your assets have gone down and you don't have a lot of liquid cash that's been guaranteed liquid and available, you can't take advantage of that opportunity. Yet those that do, that's where I have seen wealth really been built for people over the decades with clients I've worked with personally. That's where wealth oftentimes is truly built. Your personal bank can provide that guaranteed money, highly liquid, earn 6% currently and likely increasing over time while you're waiting, insured, guaranteed, tax-free, and highly liquid, which gives you that opportunity to take advantage of opportunities. Contact me at yourpersonalbank.com for more information. Stay tuned in the next segment. I got some more economic news that I think you'll find very eye-opening. Are you concerned about the direction our country is headed and how it may affect your money? I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. Your Personal Bank provides a place to grow your money safely with guarantees, tax-free, and highly liquid. This keeps your money safe, and you can take advantage of opportunities regardless of the economic situation. For more information, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422. That's yourpersonalbank.com. Concerned about market risk? I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. Diversification is one of the best ways to offset risk. Your personal bank is not affected by the stock or real estate markets. It is an uncorrelated asset that provides true diversification. For more info, tune in to the Your Personal Bank Show or contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. So I've been asking the question, are we headed for recession? In the last segment, we stated that the yield inversion curve tells us that it is. But here's another example that's eye-opening. Consumer spending is about two-thirds of gross domestic product. If the consumers are spending money, that's a really, really big deal. And if they're not, that, of course, affects the economy in a tremendous way. Couple of things about consumer spending. First of all, there's a personal savings rate that, according to the Fed, has averaged anywhere from, on the low end, roughly 5%, the average American's annual earnings, to up to 10%. Now, in the all the way back in the 1960s and 70s, from the 1960s to the 1980s, the average savings rate for the average American was at or above 10% of their income. Of course, the high inflation in the 70s ate into a lot of that. And frankly, from early 1980s to about 2005, the average savings rate, personal savings rate for the average American steadily went down to lows of around 3 or 4%. It climbed back up a little bit, the Great Recession. People rediscovered the value of having some savings, some cash reserves. And then when we had the COVID relief funds, this is where things just got blown out of the water. I have stated on this show many times that the federal government helicoptered trillions of dollars into the economy during the COVID relief, and then we're now paying the repercussions of that, inflation and different things like that. Literally, the savings rate, the personal savings rate in 2020 on the average American exceeded 30% at one point. So if you think about it, it went from about 5% on average and jumped six fold to about upwards of 30%. And then from that point on, of course, American consumers spent money to where it's now back at that 3-4% level, which is the second lowest we have seen since 1960. The amount of savings the average American has, reserves, cash reserves, is the second lowest level we've seen since 1960. That is not good. That means the typical American is running on fumes. They have very little in savings left. Many of them have spent much of that savings and the COVID relief funds twofold. One, with higher increasing inflation, more and more on costs of living. And two, a lot of people receive funds, got used to a higher lifestyle, frankly, started spending that money, and unfortunately did not change their spending habits until now. They're getting to the point where they're forced to because their savings has dwindled down to next to nothing, second lowest rate since 1960. The other chart that's eye-opening, though, and many people know about this, is credit card debt is over $1.1 trillion, which is the highest level in history since they've been measuring this. It's been steadily increasing in the last 3-4 years, primarily because of inflation. You don't have high credit card debt, or any credit card debt for that matter, if you're doing financially well. Who would voluntarily pay 20% plus interest on a loan unless they needed the money to live on or overspending, right? The cost of living has gone up. The savings has gone down. Some of it, people are just not earning enough to keep up with all of this. If the average grocery cost has increased 25% over the last 4 years, according to the U.S. government, obviously, if somebody was not earning a lot of money, that's going to impact them. If somebody's spending more than they should, they got used to a higher lifestyle and didn't change, that's going to catch up to them. My point is, many people are funding lifestyle and expenses off of credit card debt, and that will last for a while, but that's quickly going to run out once they hit their limits. The third chart, though, that's eye-opening also is the delinquency rate on all loans. According to the Federal Reserve, it's on a sharp increase over the past 2-3 years. Again, it comes down to higher costs of things causes more defaults and lower incomes. All of these things, as I stated in the first segment, small business income dropping to some of the lowest levels in history, personal savings rates being the second lowest level in history, credit card debt, highest level in history, delinquency on loans increasing rapidly. These all bode very poorly regarding our economic situation and are we headed to recession? So again, to answer the question, are we headed to recession? Using my seasonal analogy, there's four seasons of year, and we all know you can't have spring without winter. Are we headed to winter? If recession is winter, the nights are cooling, the leaves are changing colors. Get your winter clothes out. Winter's coming. Be prepared. And when it comes to financial stuff, again, ride the roller coaster, having too much of your money at risk. oftentimes doesn't make a lot of sense. I know what the mantra is out there, hang in there, eventually it'll get better and all that. I understand that. I've heard that. If you have enough time, if you have decades and decades to wait, yes, that can work. You still ride the roller coaster down and have to recover. If we look at the last couple of cycles, they took 5 and 7 years to get back and get back to even. Okay, so if you have 5 to 7 years to wait, okay, fine. And if you remember back in 2000, it was famously known as the lost decade, where literally if somebody had invested at the top of the dot-com bubble, it was, and they were S&P 500, for example, they were back to even after a decade. That's why it was called the lost decade. Look, if you've got a decade to wait for your, potentially for your money to come back, fine. But if you don't, and you don't want to ride that roller coaster down, why not reduce your risk? Why not diversify in non-correlated assets, things that have nothing to do with the stock or real estate markets or crypto or whatever else you might be investing in? Why not have some guaranteed assets? And like I said earlier, if they're liquid, then you can take advantage of the opportunities when they present themselves. There are companies that are going to survive even if we go into a hard recession. And here's the other thing. I don't know what type of recession we're, it looks very likely we're going into recession. Every indicator is pointing that out. Some people think this could be a mild one. It also has the potential, folks, of being a very severe one. This could be a hard winter. We just don't know what's going to happen. But to not be prepared, not to do anything different, going into a potentially hard winter, a hard recession, from a financial literacy standpoint, does not make much sense. Again, the reason why you're told to hang in there and all that, I get it. Understand the motivation behind Wall Street and those that tell people that is because they make money under management for the most part. And if somebody's engaged, involved, they get paid. If they're not, they don't. It's that simple. Follow the money, as you as always say, if you want to understand why something is the way it is. Doesn't mean you have to follow that advice. Doesn't mean you have to ride the roller coaster if and when it does go down, possibly sharply. Why not pull some of that away from the risk, reduce your market risk, your liability to potentially lose, and again, if it's in your personal bank, a high cash value policy, earning dividends, insured, guaranteed, tax-free, and highly liquid. Let me use an example. Are there some companies that even in a hard recession that will come through and survive and do well? Of course there are. And are there prices of these companies or a piece of real estate or crypto or, again, whatever asset it is that you like to own? Is there a price on something you say, boy, I would love to own that asset at that price? Recessions create those opportunities. And if you haven't ridden the roller coaster down and you have some, in the industry called dry powder, money in a policy is an example of where it's liquid, you could pull that, access it, pull the trigger on that asset when it hits that price that you would really love to own it at. You can build true wealth that way. You can take advantage of opportunities that way that present themselves typically in a recession. A few other thoughts. One is inflation. Now, the August CPI number, for example, came out at 2.5%, which is lower than it's been the last 3 years. That's good, but it still doesn't mean prices are going down. They're still going up, just as, not as much as before. But the problem we're dealing with is many of the things that people buy on a regular basis have gone up far more in the annual adjusted rate. Car insurance has gone up on average over 16%. Transportation about 8%. Hospital about 6%. Homeowners about 5%. Rent, same. Car repairs about 4%. Food away from home about 4%. And electricity about 4%. So in other words, many of the things that people buy on a regular basis are still inflationary numbers as anywhere from 4 to 16% annualized over the past year. And this is on top of the inflation that we've been dealing with, the cumulative effect over the past 3 years. So if you just add, say, 5% to food increase, and it's already increased 25%, well, now you're at 30% increase from just 4 years ago. And many food items, as many people know, have increased far more than 25% over the last 4 years. That's why the consumer, the American consumer, is on fumes and has the lowest, second lowest savings rate, personal savings rate in history. I have some jobs numbers I'm going to share in the next segment. They're going to help you understand what is really going on with our economy. This is Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. My show focuses on creating tax-free buckets of money, insured, guaranteed, highly liquid, and the ability to create positive arbitrage. Did you know this is the best time in over 40 years to invest in index annuities? An index annuity allows you to, one, grow your money safely without market risk. Once gains are locked in, they're guaranteed against future market loss. Two, double-digit potential upside on good market years with no losses in bad years. Principal is guaranteed. Three, a 7-8% fixed interest option is available in the first year. If you're interested in growing your money with potential index-related gains without downside market risk, this is the best time in over 40 years to consider an annuity. If your annuity is over 2 years old, the newer products likely have far superior potential returns. Please contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422 for more info. That's yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. So this recent Fortune article was discussing the latest jobs numbers. And what was interesting about this article is that the private sector hiring 3-month moving average has now dropped below 100,000. Less than 100,000 new jobs have been added per month in the entire country. We're talking about a country of over 300 million people. So that is like minuscule, hardly any jobs, new jobs being added. Now, those types of numbers, as they state, the takeaway is very clear. The job market is cooling in a classic pattern that precedes recession. We just don't see average jobs numbers slipping below 100,000 unless they're around a recessionary period. Also, the unemployment rate is climbed by a full percentage point from its low, which is also a leading economic indicator for recession. Another jobs indicator that's eye-opening, this is from the Federal Reserve, and this is the total number of jobs opening, total non-farm payroll. Well, to give you an idea, prior to the COVID shutdowns, the number of job openings, according to the Federal Reserve, was around 7 million. It dropped down to about 5 million at the bottom of the COVID lockdown period. Then after COVID, it jumped up over 12 million at the peak. And then since that point, since 2022, it's done nothing but fall off and drop to we're now down to just over half that of about 7 million. So we've gone from the number of job openings literally a couple of years ago at over 12 million, we're now at 7 and dropping fast. That is another leading economic indicator that the labor market is weakening significantly. And the August 2024 jobs reports numbers, what a lot of people don't realize is that the jobs that were added, 142,000 in August, were all part-time. There are not really any full-time jobs being added in the country that are being have showed up in the numbers. And then the last thing about the jobs reports that's eye-opening is, again, this is from the Federal Reserve, and it shows the number of foreign-born versus native-born jobs. And it turns out, since COVID, native-born workers, Americans, have lost 2 million jobs. In fact, the peak was pre-COVID, and the total number of jobs, the employment numbers for native-born Americans, citizens typically, has not reached those numbers yet. All of the increases in jobs numbers have gone to foreign-born. That's both legal and illegal. Interesting things to understand about this. The net job gains since COVID, pre-COVID, are about 4.4 billion and have basically all gone to foreign-born workers, while native-born workers have lost about 2 million jobs in that same time frame. Why is this so important? Well, mass immigration incentivizes businesses to hire cheap labor at rock-bottom prices. This is why big business is in favor of massive immigration, legal and otherwise. It's about cheap labor for them, folks. It's that simple. And the fact that the August jobs numbers that were added, nearly all of them were part-time jobs. So not only they can hire foreign-born workers cheaper, many times they can, these companies can give them part-time work, which means they can less benefits and again, cheaper labor. Mass immigration for business, large business in particular, is all about cheap labor. It's not about for the benefit of citizens. And that will help you understand those that vote against anything that could stop illegal immigration are basically motivated by the big business lobbyists that support them. It's not for the benefit of citizens. Sadly, in my opinion, it's very short-sighted of these large businesses. Henry Ford stated when he paid wages far above the national average at the time, he understood that the cars he was building, the average American at the time could not afford. If he paid his workers a better wage, they would be able to afford to buy the cars they were manufacturing and, in essence, start to create a middle class. That's forward thinking. That's innovation. That's a business person that's looking out for the improvement of not only their business, but society in general that they live in. We have a lot of very short-sighted business leaders right now who are just looking at the quarterly returns and what's going to benefit their own personal bottom line. I discuss and meet with Americans coast to coast, and most people, I stated this to somebody today, they are generally pretty decent, reasonable people. This country is still full of a lot of amazing people, yet much of our leadership, both government and business leadership, is very, very poor, and this country deserves better. The citizens deserve better leadership than what we have right now. Now I want to talk about fraud. Our tax dollars are being wasted to a degree that's really hard to comprehend. The U.S. Government Accountability Office estimates the federal government loses between $200 and $500 billion annually to fraud. And this is based on data from 2018 to 2022. That's about 2% of our GDP that's stolen every year, and it's literally trillions of dollars that is just being lost to flat-out, straight-up fraud. There's little or no accountability, and that needs to change. We, as American people, need to demand accountability, fiscal responsibility, and if our government will not pursue that goal, we need to replace those folks. We have an opportunity to do so. We're coming up really soon. And another area of what I consider fraud. Ukraine has received over $200 million of American taxpayer money every day since their war started. And the Hawaiians, who lost everything, got $700 total. Folks, that shows the priority of the current leadership. That's not the America I know. And frankly, in my opinion, it's fraudulent. Here's another one. So according to the tax returns of the Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Galveston, which is in Houston, Texas, in 2018, they received about $44 million. In 2021, the revenue for the same organization increased to over 200 million. They're considered today a non-governmental organization, and they receive a lot of grants from our federal government, our taxpayer dollars. Why is the Catholic Charities receiving so much more money, over quadrupling of their income just in 4 years? It's well known that Catholic Charities are heavily involved in illegal immigration, and our government is helping to facilitate that. And the money they're using is coming from our pockets, our taxpayer dollars. Personally, I find that fraudulent and offensive. And by the way, just so you know, I was raised and grew up as a Catholic, and I find it offensive. But here's another one. This was on the Joe Rogan show where he was interviewing people, sharing how illegal immigrants are gaming the system. One illegal immigrant was explaining how they get $2,000 each time they cross the border. And he crossed the border four times last month and made $8,000 from the government all in 1 month. He stated that there's a radio station in San Diego that's a Spanish station, and this station was explaining in Spanish how to do it, how to take advantage of the system, receive $2,000 every time you cross the border. Of course, the station broadcasts into Mexico. An illegal immigrant makes $2,000. He made $8,000 that month from our tax dollars going to this illegal immigrant who's just crossing the border. And then the last one I want to share that's what I consider the category of fraud. So the FDA has been blamed for a while that there was a rumor going around that 50% of their funding comes from the pharmaceutical industry. So FDA was upset about this. So they released an official report of their funding to prove everyone wrong. Well, it turns out that officially 47% of the funding for the FDA comes from Big Pharma. Does anybody see a problem with that? That's who they're supposed to regulate, yet nearly half of their funding comes from the companies that they're supposed to regulate. That, I'm sorry, folks, is straight up fraud. Stay tuned in the last segment. I got some things about the debt and some solutions that you're going to want to hear.
Are you prepared if we fail to avoid a recession? I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. Most of the leading economic indicators show we are headed for recession. Your Personal Bank earns dividends with guarantees, tax-free, and highly liquid. This protects you from the downside risk and allows you to take advantage of opportunities in a changing economy. For more info, contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
When people contact me, they often ask, what exactly do you do? And yes, if you contact me, I, Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show, will respond, not an assistant. I help people increase their returns, reduce taxes, increase positive cash flow, and reduce market risk. I accomplish your goals using various financial tools, including Your Personal Bank. If you have questions or would like to discuss your situation, contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. So our federal debt now is so massive that the interest costs alone now exceed $3 billion per day. Now, that happens to be double of what the interest costs on our debt was just 4 years ago. There's two reasons behind this. One, of course, is the debt has increased significantly from 4 years ago. Secondly, because of the higher interest rate environment, the cost to service the debt, in other words, the interest that the federal government has to pay on the new bonds that they issue, is increasing also. So it's a double whammy. The interest alone on the debt is increasing at a rapid rate, obviously even faster than the overall debt itself. This is what's called or known as a debt spiral. If we want to use this to put this in terms most people can understand, if you take your personal finances and you get yourself in a situation where you have to start borrowing more money, many people understand what that means. I've been there myself at times in my life where you have more month than money. That's never a good thing. So you have to borrow to make up the difference. Well, that can work for a while, but eventually what happens as you incur more and more debt, the interest on that debt piles up. So it's not only you have to pay back what you owe, but you also have to pay interest. And if that increases, eventually you get to a tipping point. You get to a point where the interest amount gets so high that you get swallowed up in a like a death spiral. It's called a debt spiral. It's a death spiral financially. Fitch, which is one of the credit reporting agencies, recently stated the U.S. national debt has exploded by nearly $700 billion in the last 3 months, and they warned America has failed to fix the growing debt burden. Unfortunately, these numbers are just going to increase because we are now at over $35 trillion of total debt and the cumulative effect of the interest on it. Because remember, the federal government doesn't pay down the interest. They don't pay down the debt, I should say. They only pay the interest. Fitch is now sounding the alarm again on the growing debt and deficit. Some time ago, they had lowered, about a year ago, I believe, lowered the credit rating of the U.S. government debt from AAA to AA+, and as they stated, they're not ready to upgrade back to AAA because of the nation's underlying fiscal condition, which is primarily too much interest on the debt. Now, is it even possible to fix this national debt crisis? The answer is yes. Is it a terminal problem? No. Is it fixable? Yes. The problem we have, though, is a lot of things are going to have to go right. We're at a point where very little can go wrong. You see, it's not the total amount of debt in and of itself that's the problem. It's the debt to GDP ratio. GDP is gross domestic product. In essence, that's what the country earns, the gross income it makes, or the people of the country, I should say, make. And today, the total national debt is about 125% of GDP. In other words, our debt equals more than a year of earnings, gross earnings for everyone in the entire country. Let's apply this to personal finance to help understand this better. For countries, a debt to GDP ratio of 60% is considered high. 80% is dangerously high, and we're at 125%. If you apply this again to your personal financial situation, let's assume you make $100,000 a year of income. Let's assume you have $60,000 of debt. That is considered high. The interest that you would have to pay on that debt would eat up a fair portion of your income. You know, you have to pay taxes, you have living expenses, the governments have expenses, the same type of things. And if interest rates increase on that debt because of higher interest rate environment, things can get worse. It's another reason why housing, oftentimes it's not recommended to spend more than 30% of your gross income on housing. Because as you get above those numbers, it gets difficult to live, to pay all the expenses you need to eat, you know, food, clothing, your housing costs, transportation, anything else for that matter, taxes, whatever. It's hard to then make the payment, whether it be rent or mortgage, doesn't matter. You don't want to spend, a good rule of thumb, more than 30% of your gross income on housing costs. Obviously, the lower percentage of that you're paying, the better and the more financially better your position will be. Now, why this is so concerning, this debt to GDP that's over 100%, if you go back throughout human history, there is only one society that has had over 100% for any significant period of time, and still survived as a society and as a country, did not fail. In fact, Rome is a famous example of having inflation problems and a big part of why Rome fell. The only other society with higher than 125% GDP and continued to succeed as a country, as a society, is Japan. And Japan has a lot of positives, but Japan has a lot of financial issues that they have been dealing with. And one of those, and this article from Business Insider really discusses this, is the world population is growing older, which is bad news for the stock market. The trend, as JP Morgan states, will continue to lower returns, earnings growth, and valuations. Their point is very simple. If the share of people over 65 increases 1%, they predict that returns will decline by just under 1%. So in other words, for about every 1% increase of the world's population over the age of 65, returns, average annual returns, decline by about the same 1%. Leads to slower growth and falling valuations. We've seen this in Japan significantly. We're starting to see this in China. The U.S. also has an aging baby boomer population. That's just the demographics. It's a fact. As they state, as retirees empty their retirement funds, national savings rates decline. It, by the way, raises bond yields, which happen to be returns. Higher interest rates on bonds happen to be returns. High cash value insurance paying policies have a very, very favorable longer term, we're talking multi-decade future. It's quite a bright spot in terms from a financial economic standpoint. The final result of this study was that as an older population continues to increase, it leads to declining returns, lower earnings growth, and weaker valuations. Over a 10-year period, as they state, a 1% increase in the number of people over 65 correlates to a 0.92% decline in annual stock returns. We have far more than 1% increase on folks getting over the age of 65 over the next decade or two, again, because of the aging baby boomer population. Also, another key point, I've discussed this before, Warren Buffett's just sold another chunk of stock, and in fact, he has sold more stock than he's bought in each of the last 7 quarters, which is not common for him in terms of his investment career over 60 years. Now, there's 2 primary reasons that Warren Buffett has been selling more stock. The first is he's been stating this, he believes stock market prices are far overvalued. He believes a recession is coming. He's made multiple statements to that effect, and he plans to reinvest after the market crashes. These are quotes from Warren Buffett. The Oracle of Omaha, considered one of the best investors in history, you might want to follow his lead. Reduce your market risk, increase guaranteed assets, increase liquidity, increase guaranteed assets. Your personal bank can accomplish all those things for you and then allow you to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves after a correction. Second reason why he's been selling stocks is the current tax laws are set to expire in a year and a half. In other words, we have the rest of this year and next year left for lower income tax and lower capital gains rates. Long-term capital gains currently are 15% for anyone, say a couple with over $124,000 gross annual income. If they have less than that, you can have some zero capital gains, by the way. Contact me at yourpersonalbank.com if you want to learn more about this. But the long-term capital gains for people earning more than a couple earning more than $120,000 a year is currently 15%. The current tax law is set to expire in 2 years. That's going to move up to 20%. If you have an asset that has some capital gains, stocks, real estate, various things like that, and you want to take advantage of the lower capital gains, you want to sell in 2024 or 2025. The long-term capital gains rate's going to increase to 20%. Will Congress extend the current tax laws? The only way that's going to happen is Trump would have to win the White House, the Republicans have to win the House and the Senate, and the RINOs would have to get on board and agree to extend the current tax Trump tax cuts. even if they did all of those things, with there's no guarantee of any of that happening, it's not like capital gains or income taxes are going to go down. It just means they're going to stay the same level they are now. Otherwise, which is the most likely scenario, Congress does nothing, tax rates are going up on nearly everyone, both income and capital gains. Again, if you have assets subject to capital gains, I strongly encourage you to consider selling some of those in 2024 and perhaps some in 2025. You may be able to take advantage of zero capital gains, particularly if your gross income as a couple is below $124,000. Contact me at yourpersonalbank.com for more information. You only have so much time left to take advantage of this. Let me finish up with a few thoughts. One of them is Trump has proposed a 15% corporate tax rate for companies that make products in the U.S. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. This is an interesting proposal because it would incentivize companies to produce products in the United States. Given what's happened with our manufacturing base over the last several decades, this is something that could absolutely revitalize our manufacturing capability as a country and rebuild our economy. It's an idea that I hope gains traction because I love it. It could be awesome for our country, for our economy. I know there's a lot of people out there that don't necessarily love Trump, but there's also many people that prefer his policies. I could put myself in that category myself. But this kind of helps. Sometimes it's not so much who likes a person, but who dislikes them that might tell you more about that person. Mike Pence is not voting for Trump. Neither is Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, or Dick Cheney. None of them. None of those people were folks that did much for our country. And in fact, in many ways, did a lot of harm to our country, in my opinion. Those just give me more reasons to be favorable, if you know what I'm trying to say. And then James Madison in Federalist Paper number 39 wrote, "It was essential for the elected to be drawn from the people and not the political elites, and that office holders were to do so as part-timers for a limited period. Otherwise, tyrannical nobles would take over." James Madison, the author of the Constitution, was strongly in favor of term limits. My only regret is he didn't write those in as law. And I'm going to leave you with this thought. To every citizen sick and tired of the parasitic class in Washington sucking our country dry, November 5th will be our Liberation Day. As always, stay tuned to the Your Personal Bank show for more great information. And as long as it's on our money, in God we trust.
Contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422.
Would you like to sponsor the Your Personal Bank show hosted by Ferentz Toth? We are looking for like-minded partners who want to join our rapidly growing radio show. I frequently state, economic freedom is freedom. Thomas Jefferson wrote, "A well-informed electorate is a prerequisite to democracy." Contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com to help increase financial literacy and protect our freedoms. Financial literacy in America is almost non-existent. It's typically not taught in schools, the media, at work, or in the home. I'm Ferentz, host of the Your Personal Bank show. If you would like me to speak to your investing group or an organization with a financial focus, please contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. My goal is to increase financial literacy and enhance your financial future. Again, it's 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.